UB Blake's Piano Roll of Charleston Rag, cut 100 years ago last month. And now on BBC Radio 3, here's Kevin Lejeune and Jazz Lineup.
Hello and welcome. On today's show, there are thrilling highlights from the Gateshead Jazz Festival, two excellent sets from bassist and singer Miles Mosley and the piano trio Triptych. And if you're a fan of David Bowie, stay tuned to hear about a very special concert that Jazz Lineup will be hosting in the next few weeks by the man who led the last band to play with the pop legend, that saxophonist Donny McCaslin. But to get us underway today, something from the brand new album by flautist and composer Gareth Lacrane. He's a highly respected member of the British jazz scene who's worked with anybody from Giorgio Manzio to the Scottish National Jazz Orchestra, but it's his own big band we're going to listen to now. The new album is called Fistfight at the Barn Dance, which sounds like the title of a country and western record, however it's anything but. This is the sophisticated, slightly soundtracky groove of Do It. We'll be right back. Do It by the Gareth Lacrain Big Band, a mighty 20-piece unit that certainly packs a punch. Featured players include saxophonist Paul Booth, trombonist Mark Nightingale and organist Ross Stanley. And it's great to hear Gareth drawing on his love of film composers like Lalo Schifrin and Quincy Jones. Now, an artist who gave Quincy one of his first major breaks in the jazz world was the legendary bebop trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie, who was celebrated at this year's proms. Woody in You is one of Dizzy's anthems that's been covered by countless groups, including the Modern Jazz Quartet. The vibraphonist Nat Steele pays tribute to the MJQ, paying tribute to Dizzy, with a cover of that very composition, a sharp, snappy theme with the danceable Latin rhythms that Dizzy loves so much. Gabriel Lachin is on piano, Dario DeLeese on double bass, Steve Brown on drums, and Nat Steele on vibes. Here they are with Dizzy Gillespie's Woody in You. Thank you. a lovely playful version of Dizzy Gillespie's Woody and You, taken from Nat Steele's album Portrait of the Modern Jazz Quartet. Obviously a great band featuring some great players. I'm sure you know the likes of John Lewis, Milt Jackson, Percy Heath and Kenny Clarke. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with Kevin Legendre. Stay tuned for details of a very special concert by saxophonist Donny McCaslin being recorded by Jazz Lineup, and there'll also be information on how you may be able to attend. And shortly we'll be hearing more music from the Gateshead Jazz Festival by Miles Mosley and his group. The Los Angeles bassist came to prominence a few years ago as a member of the group led by saxophonist Kamasi Washington, but he's also a band leader in his own right. As well as playing the bass, Miles sings and writes, and he has a lot to say about the art of composing as well as producing new sounds on his instrument. When I was at the festival, I caught up with Miles on their tour bus, which I have to say was like a hotel on wheels. So let's enter the inner sanctum and learn more about Miles Mosley and the West Coast Get Down. That's the name of the group. I started by asking him about the group, which has players like drummer Tony Austin and pianist Cameron Graves. And it's more like a collective or family of musicians. Here's Miles.
Effectively, the West Coast Get Down is a family of musicians, a group of musicians that I say family because we're brothers, because we've been together for so long and we've known each other since high school, and some go back to even elementary school and before that. And we all grew up together in Los Angeles, California, and we've been making music together for nearly 25 years. And a couple years ago, we decided to invest in each other and make a bunch of albums, and so we got into the studio, and with the help of each person's ulterior talent. So the first set of those songs that came out was The Epic with Kamasi Washington, and then I released Uprising. And it's actually been a lot of fun because we've been able to do all these album release concerts and just share our music with the world and continue to tour and have this revolving cycle of projects.
Miles, I'd like to ask if there is a strong social and political undercurrent to the music, especially with your album Uprising?
Well, I think that we live in a time in which artists are going to have the benefit of being able to make a decision as to how they want to be involved directly or indirectly with politics. For my album Uprising, my choice was to create a collection of songs or put together a collection of songs that dealt with messy human emotions that we all have that are universal, that are a common concern. And so sometimes it's something like Heartbreaking Efforts of Others, which is a song about that sticky emotion where you think you're trying to do something right to assist and help out, and it ends up mucking everything up. And so when I myself investigated those types of emotions, I realized that there wasn't really a place for me to go that sonically sounded like I wanted, but also felt like a refuge, and I felt like I could contribute to the lexicon of music in that manner. And I think that that's as important politically for an artist to do, is to create music that people can rely upon and find answers in, as well as, you know, great rally songs and, you know, all the classical types of revolutionary songs.
Can you tell me about the electronics, the kind of equipment that you use to change the sound of the bass?
Sure. I have a pedal board that, you know, quite frankly, doesn't have any type of electronics that are difficult to find. What I've been able to do is take an instrument that has not really been challenged with the effects and open it up with the help of bow work, which is something that I learned because I studied classically first. And you can really make the bass sing. And once you can do that, you can begin to affect it in a way that allows people to feel something different from that instrument. And ultimately, everything I'm trying to do is to get people to feel something when I play. And I grew up in a household. My mom is a hippie from San Francisco, so Jimi Hendrix was always on, and I've had those influences flying around in my house since I was a child. And so once I got even close to sounding like Hendrix, I kind of knew what direction I wanted to go in and lean in towards.
He plays the bass, but as you can hear, he likes guitars and has a wide range of influences. Great to hear the thoughts of Miles Mosley, and time now for highlights of his set at Gateshead. In the band are Dante Winslow on trumpet, Ryan Porter on trombone, Cameron Graves on piano and keyboards, Tony Usson on drums, and of course Miles Mosley on upright bass and vocals. We'll open with a piece composed by pianist Cameron Graves. This is Planetary Prince.
Terry Prince, Cameron Hayes, also available back with Professor the CD Shot, Tony Austin on the drums. My name is Miles Mosley, and this is the West Coast Get Down. People asked why I decided to name this album Uprising, and aside from the most obvious things that we can all choose to decide to participate in or not, the fact of the matter is that I believe that everything we do requires assistance from the people around us, and I know this because it's how I make music. This is a team sport on this stage, and there is no one star. Everybody brings something special to the equation, and you don't have to know everything. You just need to know that you have surrounded yourself with people you can rely on. And that process is the very beginning of a community. It's the beginning of a society, a revolution, or an uprising. So all these songs embody some of those difficulties, help you lift up and get going, but also give you a shoulder to cry on when you feel like no one understands you but you, which is what it's like to be a musician, by the way. I'm a flawed man, living in a flawed world. My confidence is bound in, yeah, my head is in a whirl. I've climbed the tower of song and cast my hopes inside the well. Seems the harder I try it, yeah, the bigger I fail. More than this, if I should choose your right from wrong. Promised more than this. And sometimes I'm lazy, but never ill prepared. So some wounds are too deep, never to repair. So much more than this.
Thank you very much. Cameron Graves, Phil DJ, Ryan Porter, Tony Austin. My name is Miles Mosley. We're the West Coast Get Down. You're the Uprising.
Miles Mosley and the West Coast Get Down concluding their high-energy set at the Gateshead Jazz Festival with a song called Abraham, which had most of the audience up and dancing, and they were a fantastic finale to our afternoon of music on the Jazz Lineup stage. You're listening to Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Kevin Legendre, bringing you the best jazz, both live and on record. All Donny McCaslin fans will know that the saxophonist certainly delivers in concert, combining funk, rock, electronica and fierce improvising. Well, I have some news on how you may be able to see him live coming up after this track. From his album, Beyond Now, this is the hard-hitting Shake Loose. The very tough groove of Shake Loose by Donny McCaslin, and some exciting news now. Jazz Lineup will be hosting a very special performance by Donny and his band on October the 26th at BBC Scotland's headquarters in Glasgow. Julian Joseph is presenting, and the show also features vocalist Jamoke Fashola and her quartet. The good news is tickets are free and the random draw for this event will open straight after the show. So check out the Jazz Lineup page for more details and enter the draw. You're listening to the best of jazz on Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Kevin Legendre. Time now for more concert music from the group Triptych, led by pianist Paul Edis, a talented composer and educator on the Northeast jazz scene. The trio performed a suite for us at Gateshead, and it was a fine through-composed piece called the Fragmented Suite, which had the audience enthralled from start to finish. We don't have time to play it in its entirety, but here's a portion of that performance where you can hear how skillfully the music explores a wide range of moods and textures, starting the journey in one place and ending somewhere very different. Paul Susans is on bass, Rob Walker on drums, and Paul Edis on piano and clarinet. They open their set with Dr. Gonzo's. The group Triptych, led by Paul Edis, with part of their Fragmented suite, which wowed the audience at the Gateshead Jazz Festival. Remember, if you want to know all the titles played on today's show, then just check out the playlist via the Radio 3 website. On next week's jazz lineup, there's a special edition marking Thelonious Monk at 100. It is, of course, the iconic pianist's centenary. And on Monday night at 11 p.m, Soweto Kinch presents a concert celebrating the 80th birthday of the inspirational composer and bandleader Mike Gibbs at the Scarborough Jazz Festival. And in the interval, Soweto will be talking to Mike about his many years as a composer, arranger and player. Till next time, from me, Kevin Legendre, bye-bye.
Jazz Lineup was produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. Don't forget, there's another helping of jazz on Radio 3 later tonight when Jeffrey Smith takes to the airwaves for a tribute this week to the drummer Buddy Rich. He died in 1987, but it'd be his 100th birthday this year, an anniversary Jeffrey celebrates with the help of, among others, Tommy Dorsey and Lester Young. Jeffrey Smith's jazz begins tonight at midnight.
The leaves are changing colour and the weather's on the turn. There are other changes this autumn too. Every weekday afternoon here on BBC Radio 3, immerse yourself in a complete concert. Afternoon Concert starts at 2 o'clock. And In Tune, with live music and guests, moves to the later time of 5. The one constant this autumn. Great performances all afternoon on BBC Radio 3.
And there's a great performance now on Radio 3. It's 6 o'clock and it's time for Opera on 3. As part of the BBC Opera season, Radio 3 is broadcasting all 7 of the operas featured in a new exhibition at the V&A. It's called Opera, Passion, Power and Politics, and it explores the stories behind 7 operatic premieres in 7 cities. It's an immersive exhibition presented in partnership with the Royal Opera House that takes you on a fascinating journey through nearly 400 years of history. We start the cycle at the Venice Carnival, for which Monteverdi wrote his last opera, L'Incoronazione di Poppea, a classical story of scandal, murder and ambition, which mirrors the decadent life of the city. The performance we're about to hear was recorded earlier this year at the Schwetzingen Festival in Germany. It's introduced by Andrew McGregor.
It's Monteverdi's last great opera, premiered during the Venice Carnival season in 1643. Il Nerone, ossia L'Incoronazione di Poppea, that's the full title, Nero, or The Coronation of Poppea, one of the first operas to use historical events to give it shape. And we're going to hear it in the performance given by La Veneziana, directed by Davide Pozzi at this year's Schwetzingen Festival in Germany, with mezzo Giuseppina Bridelli as the Emperor Nero and soprano Emanuela Galli as Poppea. And their adulterous love affair propels the plot. But nothing about this opera, its history or its performance is as simple as it may seem at first glance, which is why I'm joined by musicologist and Baroque specialist Dr. Hannah French. Now, Hannah, we'll get to some of the issues of authenticity, editions, manuscripts and performance practice a bit later on. But let's begin by giving Monteverdi's Poppea some basic operatic context. Where are we exactly? Because we're in the last year of Monteverdi's life, 1643. But what stage is this fledgling art form at by now?
Well, we've come a long way since Orfeo at the beginning of the century.
Because that was over 30 years before,
absolutely,
wasn't it?
Absolutely. So this is mature Monteverdi, if indeed it is Monteverdi. And as you we'll say, we will come back to that. Crucially, we're in Venice. And crucially, Venice is new to opera. The first public opera houses opened in 1637. So now we have a paying public who have an appetite mostly for mythology, for flying machines, for all the pyrotechnics and the colour of opera. So Monteverdi, or whoever, really bowls them a googly with this one.
Because we need to remind ourselves, this is a drama per musica, previously the province of the princes, the nobles. This was music for the private courts.
Right.
And it's now a business.
It is.
It's now money-making.
It is. And therefore, you have to satisfy the tastes